This is Kathy Geary. Welcome to Now and Then here on WJFF Radio Catskill. On today's program, we'll be exploring the singer-songwriter from the perspective of the executive director of the Grammy Museum, Bob Santelli. The Grammy Museum. Now, I have personally never been to the museum, but I visited the website, GrammyMuseum.org, and it's such an informative website. I learned that the museum is less than 3 years old, was established in December of 2008, and it coincided with the 50th anniversary of the Grammy Awards. And my impression is that for such a young museum, what a vibrant place it is, what an astounding variety of programs you have, and the mission statement, the short version, is devoted to exploring and celebrating music. On today's program, we're going to be having a conversation. I'm speaking with the executive director of the Grammy Museum, Mr. Bob Santelli. Welcome, Bob.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
You know, the museum is less than 3 years old. I'm curious, have you been involved from the very beginning?
Yes. And the opportunity to start and create a museum, once again, from scratch, was something that I couldn't resist. So I was the first employee, the first person hired, and the person who was responsible then for putting the great team together that we have today.
One of the things I'm very interested in is the creative process that musicians go through as they practice the art of songwriting and performing. And the mission statement of the museum, one of the mission statements is to explore and celebrate the creative process. And one of your most interesting programs is an interview series called An Evening With. Now, I was really impressed with your hands-on involvement in so many aspects of the museum's programs, and specifically that you yourself did an interview in that series with Ringo Starr in January of 2010 when Ringo released his most recent album, Why Not? So, Mr. Santelli, what did you learn about Ringo in that interview?
Well, it's interesting because many years ago, back in the early 1980s, I had done a book with Max Weinberg, Bruce Springsteen's drummer and former drummer on Conan O'Brien. We did a book called The Big Beat.
The Big Beat, right.
The Big Beat celebrated and really looked into the role that drummers played in the history of rock and roll. And we interviewed a couple of dozen great drummers from DJ Fontana, Elvis Presley's drummer, right on down. And clearly, Max Weinberg has always said that Ringo was his true mentor, his main influence. So I had a chance to interview Ringo back in 1982 and spent some time in England with him. So it was an opportunity to ask at the Grammy Museum the questions I didn't get to ask about the Beatles and about drums, et cetera, from that original interview. And Ringo was so accommodating. We're very proud of the fact that, you know, this past year, we've had both Yoko Ono and we've had Ringo. And that gets us halfway through the story of the Beatles, you know. And it's been exciting and to get on stage with these kind of people. And professionally, it's an honor to do it. But as a fan, because I'm still a fan, just like all of your listeners and you, you get to ask questions that you dreamt of asking these people. So it's really a lot of fun. And hopefully for the people who get to come, there's only 200 seats, so the tickets are at a premium. But these people get to, you know, hear, for lack of a better description, hear history from the horse's mouth.
Wow. I did an episode of my program Now and Then when Ringo released his album, and the idea that I had, the role of the drummer, you know, Lennon and McCartney obviously produced a body of music, it's undeniable, and Ringo Starr never really shared in that songwriting credit. But when I think about the role of the drums in the sound that the Beatles had, I can't help but feel that he was such an important collaborator in that music. Did he talk about that, his role as a drummer?
You know, he is not recognized in rock drum history as being one of the great drummers, at least on the surface. You know, they always point to the flashiest drummers, Ginger Baker, Keith Moon, John Bonham, mm-hmm. of course, these kind of people. But when you think of the music that the Beatles created, having one of those kind of, quote, busy drummers behind the kit would have been disastrous. It would have changed the feel and the tone and the ambiance of the music. Ringo knew and went by the adage that less is more. He provided what was necessary and then let the genius of the other three just explode. And in his own way, then, Ringo, too, was a genius in terms of understanding the role that he was supposed to play. And he's very proud of that, and rightfully so, but he's also someone that I think deserves a lot more credit because he played what was necessary and what was right.
Well, I think that the museum certainly is fulfilling, exploring the creative process by, you know, giving Ringo a platform to discuss this type of subject, you know. And I can tell that you must really enjoy this part of your work. Let's take a minute to listen to a track from Ringo Starr's Why Not, released in January 2010. This song is called Everyone Wins, and it was co-written by Ringo Starr and Johnny Warman. Be sure to notice the effect of Ringo's drumming style, that loping gait that he has. It's really infectious. Ringo Starr.
Will we ever learn what makes the world go round? Now it's our concern, we still return to the same old ground. Nothing is new under the sun. But things will get better when we all are one. We'll play a different game. Harmony is fine, but after a time, well, the key must change. Open your eyes, don't lose your way. Remember today, everyone wins. The light that's shining out from touch everything that you see. Everyone wins. You reach into the silence, you will find it's the time to believe. Take care of yourself, there's no mystery. Try to understand, everything's planned. It's more than you and me. Magic may come, magic may go. It's not the end of the show. Everyone wins. The light that's shining out from you will touch. Doubt. The light that's shining out from you will touch, everything that you see. Everyone wins. You reach into the silence, you will find it's the time to believe. Everyone wins. Everyone wins. Everyone wins.
Ringo Starr from his most recent album, Why Not. That song is called Everyone Wins. I'm Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then here on WJFF, award-winning hydro-powered radio. The Grammy Museum in downtown Los Angeles is less than 3 years old, and on today's program, we're having a conversation with the executive director, Mr. Bob Santelli. The museum is a vibrant place. It's really a living museum, and they have some fascinating programs. We just heard Mr. Santelli talk to us about an interview that he did in the interview series called An Evening With. A year before your interview with Ringo Starr, right as the museum had opened in January of 2009, you also did another interview in the An Evening With series, and you spoke with Brian Wilson just as he was releasing the Lucky Old Son album. What was that like?
Well, you know, that was the very first one we did, and you know, I'm a former music journalist, and when some of my colleagues heard that I was going to start with Brian Wilson, they said, well, you know, he's not the easiest guy to get up on stage and spend an hour talking to. Mm-hmm. And I knew that. But, you know, here we were in Los Angeles. You can't ask for a more important songwriter in Los Angeles.
Oh, Southern California. Oh,
yeah.
It's his.
And yeah, and I said, how can I start with anyone else? And not only that, but, you know, I've known Brian's work for a long time. I had interviewed him in the past, and I just felt that there was this connection that I had, that it would be a success. And we were very fortunate. You know, people were taking bets on, well, will he talk for 7 minutes or 8 minutes or 9 minutes? We got 46. I remember the number precisely. And it was a great interview, and it's one of the ones I'm most proud of, because again, this is not something that Brian does on a regular basis, but he agreed to do it, number one, and he was great. And to this day, one of my fondest moments in our short history at the Grammy Museum is the Brian Wilson, An Evening with Brian Wilson, because not only was the interview great, but then he turned around and did 6 or 7 songs that just melted the place.
Do you look forward to these interviews, and how do you prepare?
I very much look forward to them. You know, to me, it's one of the most important things that we do, because the music that we're celebrating, popular and roots music, this is a living, breathing music form, and it's best to hear it from the artists if they're still alive and if they're still able to tell their stories. And, of course, we go after people who have made significant contributions to this music. But I love it. I wish I can do them all.
Let's take a minute to listen to a track from that Lucky Old Son, Brian Wilson's latest album, released in September of 2008. This song is called Southern California, Brian Wilson.
I had this dream, singing with my brothers in harmony, supporting each other. Tailwinds will spin down the Pacific coast, surfing on the AM. Heard those voices again. Southern California, dreams wake up. and the warmth of the rays, her music in the air, and in the waves, the wind chime, laughter rhyme, we had nothing but time. In Southern California, I heard the voice of my mom. Southern California, dreams wake up for you. And when you wake up here, you wake up everywhere. Living your dream. Don't want to sleep, you might miss something. Whoa, 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 it's magical. I'm glad it happened to me. Nodded up in the band room, woke up in history. Silhouettes, the sun went into the sea. As we headed home, we drove into a movie. Love songs, pretty girls, didn't want it to end. Tried to slow down the motion so it can move us again. In Southern California, dreams wake up for you. And when you wake up here, you wake up everywhere.
Brian Wilson, from his most recent album, That Lucky Old Sun. That's his composition called Southern California. And what a genius we have. What a treasure, an American master. You know, hearing him singing about harmony with his brothers, it's just so chilling. It's quite beautiful, very effective. I'm Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then here on WJFF Radio Catskill. Today's program, we're spending a little time in Southern California ourselves. I'm having an interview with the executive director of the Grammy Museum based in downtown Los Angeles, Mr. Bob Santelli. You've done some pretty exciting interviews. How do you prepare?
In terms of preparation, you know, I prepare, believe it or not, very little, unless I don't know the artist. But having spent, you know, close to 35 years in the music, in music history, music culture, you know, I have a basis, like I'm sure you do, and others who were music journalists like myself. It's I love the spontaneity of it, and sometimes my staff gets a little nervous because I won't do anything. I'm really the kind of interviewer who waits to get on stage and then, in essence, takes the temperature of the room and the artist, and then go from there. And I like the spontaneity of it. So it's really less of an interview and more of a conversation, but a conversation, I hope, that has depth and detail and provides a meaningful hour for the people who are there.
Well, it's certainly a creative approach to, I guess, the art of interviewing. One of the things that was emphasized in a lot of the information on your wonderful website was the idea of the legacy, the concept of the legacy of the musician. And right now, you've got some special exhibits there at the Grammy Museum in Los Angeles. You are currently featuring an exhibit with John Lennon, Michael Jackson, Roy Orbison, and, you know, other people. And I'm curious, how do you acquire these artifacts for the museum? How does that happen?
Well, it all depends. In many cases, you know, I've been in the music museum business now for over 20 years, and before that, as I said, a music journalist. You develop a good Rolodex, and so you have a lot of contacts out there, and it's a whole lot easier for us to use the Grammy brand, and then also the personal contacts that I might have or other people on staff might have to explain what we want to do. Very, very fortunate in the fact that the Grammy Museum has come out of the box with a sense of integrity, because the artists tell us that they like doing it for us. They think what we're doing is something valuable. You know, there are other music museums who take different tacks. There are lots of music museums, and they do a good job. This is no disrespect, but they deal more with memorabilia and nostalgia. They're history museums as opposed to what we are. And so we try and stay away from that. We try to go after, as you said before, the creative process. Artists find that unique and different. And therefore, they're more apt to say, you know what, I've never done that before. That sounds really interesting. And we get them on board, and we go from there. But, we're excited that they've agreed to do this.
Well, if I think I'm understanding what you're saying, let me see if I've got this right. When we have an artist and they've reached a certain maturity, right? They've already had commercial success, and you're saying that the idea of their legacy, their musical legacy, like becomes more important, and then they're opening and to actually donating things to the museum.
They don't donate in most cases. They'll lend it to us.
Lend, okay.
You know, and the key here is that, you know, a great exhibit informs, tells a story or informs, and it inspires. You know, the hope is that you'd walk through the John Lennon songwriter exhibit, let's just say. You may be a big Beatles fan and may have read all the books on John Lennon. Well, why would you come to, you know, a John Lennon songwriter exhibit at the Grammy Museum? Well, you might come because if we did our job right, presenting John Lennon in a different view. Here we are, we're looking at John Lennon, the songwriter. What made John Lennon a great songwriter? Try to explore that and unfold the mysteries, if you will, of his roots, of his sensibilities, of his relationship with Paul. So it's not any definitive story, but it is something that's designed to either introduce young people to John Lennon or for those Beatles fans out there, say, I've never thought about it that way. That's really interesting. Or I've always heard about those lyrics, and there they are. You know, we take great pride at the museum in selecting the right kind of stories that we think are important to tell. And then once we have the story, to go out and get the proper objects to help tell that story in a way that is rich and memorable for the visitor.
It's brilliant. That's just brilliant. Let's take a minute to jump on board the concept of supporting the legacy of John Lennon. And let's listen to a song from John Lennon's Double Fantasy, Watching the Wheels.
People say I'm crazy, doing what I'm doing. Well, they give me all kinds of warnings to save me from ruin. When I say that I'm okay, well, they look at me kind of strange. Surely you're not happy now, you no longer play the game. My life away. kinds of advice designed to enlighten me. When I tell them that I'm doing fine, watching shadows on the wall, don't you miss the big time, boy, you're no longer on the ball.
John Lennon, Watching the Wheels, from his Double Fantasy album with Yoko Ono. I'm Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then here on WJFF, award-winning hydro-powered radio. Today's program, we have the pleasure of speaking with Mr. Bob Santelli, the executive director of the Grammy Museum in Los Angeles, California. You have an exhibition that was developed at the Grammy Museum, and it's actually going to be on display right here in our Sullivan County area at the museum at Bethel Woods, the Performing Arts Center. This exhibition is called Strange Cosmic Experience, and it'll be at the Bethel Woods Museum. It's actually opening on Saturday, July 16th, and the exhibition runs through October 30th. You've got artifacts from The Doors, Janis Joplin, and Jimi Hendrix. And from what I understand, this is the first time that an exhibition from the Grammy Museum has traveled anywhere. How did that happen? And what's the relationship between your museum and the museum at Bethel Woods?
Well, the relationship is more, I guess, personal, because before I accepted the job at the Grammy Museum, I acted as a consultant on the Bethel Woods project and was very much involved in the early stages of that museum. And, you know, the 60s, pop music, 60s rock is really my area of specialty. And of course, I'm originally from New Jersey. So, you know, this is kind of like home. We wanted to start our traveling exhibition with a particular exhibit, and we thought, you know what, we like this exhibit. It would fit perfectly at Bethel Woods because two of the three artists that we celebrate were at Woodstock, and we have a great story to tell. And people said, well, you know, how do these three people, you know, three artists get put together? Came up with the idea because, unfortunately, you know, we had celebrated the 30th anniversaries of these Jim Morrison, Jimi Hendrix, and Janis Joplin, their deaths, untimely deaths, all at age 27. And when we looked at a story to tell, we realized that collectively those three artists, when they passed, it all but ended the great creative thrust of the 1960s here in America. Add that to the demise of the Beatles, same year, 1970, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden what you have now is a real sea change in the history of rock and roll. So now the 70s begin, and the music changes. But these three artists, having them removed from the scene, unfortunately because of drugs by and large, ended an era. So we explore, you know, why, where are their roots, what are their common roots, and what did they accomplish, and how are they missed? So hopefully if we did a good job, people coming to that exhibit will walk away with some new ideas, some fresh ideas, and you know, maybe go back and re-listen to some of those great records that those artists made.
Well, you know, I think we're really fortunate to have this type of exhibition available here in the Sullivan County area, Bethel Woods Museum. And they have actually invited you to appear in the 2011 speaker series. And the day before the Strange Cosmic Experience opens on Saturday, July 16th, the day before that exhibition opens, you're actually going to be here in person and delivering a speech on July the 15th, Friday. Tell us about what your speech is about and how that ties in with the exhibition.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about it as I just gave you a little summary of.
Well,
why
you don't want to spoil the surprise. Don't spoil the surprise.
No surprises, but seriously, looking at, you know, why the exhibit is important, we're going to talk a little bit about the importance of your exhibit, of your museum in Bethel Woods, and why that has become such an important part of the music museum landscape, as it becomes a pilgrimage site for not just people who are baby boomers, but for people who really believe in a lot of the concepts that Woodstock stood for. And then I'm going to talk about each of the three artists, play some music, talk about how collectively they were this powerhouse of creativity in America in the late 1960s, and what that meant for the music and what that meant for the youth culture, and again, how they're missed, you know, and what would have happened. Make some predictions, and then of course take some questions, because there'll be a lot of people in the audience, I presume, who are very passionate about Jimmy or Janice or the Doors, mm-hmm. and will have some interesting things to say, and I look forward to talking to them and answering questions or hearing what they have to say as well. Yeah.
So the idea of legacy, when I was reading about some of the items in this Strange Cosmic Experience exhibition, I discovered that you've got a painting that Janis Joplin actually was a painter.
Yes, a couple of paintings, actually. She, you know, like many creative people, particularly in the late 60s, but not just exclusively there, they had their hands in other things. I mean, Jim Morrison was a filmmaker. Jimi Hendrix was an artist as well. Janis wrote poetry, some of the most engaging. You're going to see, we have a series of her letters that she sent home when she was out in San Francisco in the late 60s, where you're going to see, you will demythicize her, and you're going to get to the point of understanding that this is the same kind of person, like all of us, would worry about what to buy mom for Christmas. You know, I mean, it's just a very personal, very down-to-earth, very, very innocent look at Janis Joplin that, you know, whiskey belting, soul stirring blues woman on stage. Well, when she wrote home, she was a little girl. And it's really exciting to see that. You'll see that with Jimmy, you'll see that with Jim Morrison and the rest of the Doors as well, but primarily with Janis. We came across some great artifacts.
The vulnerability. Well, you know, it's fascinating because, you know, we think we know these artists, and yet there's still more mystery and things to discover about them.
You bet.
Let's take a minute and listen to a Janis Joplin recording from her 1971 album, Pearl. This is a live performance, Little Girl Blue, Janis Joplin.
Something I heard years ago by the great Nina Simone, and I always wanted to do it, so I did it. And I'm gonna do it again, right now. Count your fingers. What else? What else can you do? And I know how alone you feel. I know you feel that you're through. But go and sit right back down. Go on a count. Count your fingers. My unhappy, my unlucky, all my little girl blues. Those raindrops, and I know they're falling all around you. And all you ever had to count on, you're gonna wanna lean on, or you're ever gonna need, dear. I wanna tell you right now, it's gonna feel like those raindrops do when they're falling down. When
Janis Joplin from her Pearl album. That was Little Girl Blue. I'm Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then here on WJFF, award-winning hydro-powered radio. So we've just discovered that Janis Joplin was also an oil painter. And there'll be an exhibition at the Bethel Woods Museum featuring a painting that Janis Joplin has painted. We're having a conversation on today's program with the executive director of the Grammy Museum, Bob Santelli. One of the things I was really surprised to find out when I was at the Grammy Museum website, I discovered that Grace Slick has also devoted about the past 20 years to a career as an artist, as a visual artist and painting. And I understand at the end of the month, at the end of July, that she's actually going to be presenting a program, an evening at the Grammy Museum with Grace Slick. How did the museum make the connection to Grace Slick, and what's your reaction to her art?
Her art is really, really good. You'd be surprised, but she lives out in Los Angeles now, and we knew that, and we were an admirer. We had seen pieces of her art and said, wow, this is really, really special. We ought to get her here to talk about art. And, you know, it's yet another part of what we're trying to do programmatically speaking, because in addition to having Grace Slick there, for younger people, the rapper Chris Brown is also interested in art. And on August 4th, I'll be bringing Chris Brown in to talk about graffiti art and hip-hop art. And he'll talk and he'll perform as well. But I don't even think, actually, you just got the scoop because we haven't even announced that. But he will be there, and we'll be talking about the same thing, art. I love going beyond the convention of what these artists bring to their fans and to audiences. You know, we know them as musicians and artists, but there's also, you know, Patti Smith is a great poet and mm-hmm. photographer, and mm-hmm. and Bruce Springsteen's a great photographer, and so you find out things about these artists that really help complete the picture of who they are and how intense that creative process is for them, because oftentimes making music just isn't enough.
Or it's just another aspect of a creative process. Okay. One of my favorite singer-songwriters is also really well known for her oil paintings, Joni Mitchell. Joni Mitchell received her Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award in 2002. And I'm just curious, do you have any plans or any connection with Joni Mitchell with the museum?
We do. We do have a connection. We have been after her since the day we opened. She did an interview for us for one of our exhibits. We had to go all the way up to the wild of British Columbia by train and by plane and by boat and by car to get to her cabin
yes.
to do the interview, because she was out there in the middle of nowhere working on an opera, and which hasn't seen the light of day to my knowledge. What a fascinating person, and we hope to get her at some point in Los Angeles for an evening with Joni Mitchell. That has not happened yet, but I can tell you when it does, I will be first online to do the questioning. I can promise you that.
Massive mess within.
Joni Mitchell, Sex Kills. That's her composition from her album Turbulent Indigo, a Grammy Album of the Year in 1994. And I was just fascinated to learn that in the interview that the Grammy Museum conducted with Joni Mitchell, currently in composition mode at her home in British Columbia, she's writing an opera. I'm so intrigued. I can't wait to hear more. You know, they recently performed Joni Mitchell's Shine music to a completely choreographed performance by the Alberta Ballet in Canada. Well, when I think of a legendary artist like Joni Mitchell, and then I think about new artists. For instance, 2011, the album of the year, the Grammy album of the year, was awarded to a Canadian band called Arcade Fire for their third, their third album called The Suburbs. So here's my question. At what point does the museum get interested in an artist? Are you like already collecting artifacts for Arcade Fire?
We're keeping track, that's for sure. We have a program called Homegrown, in which we go into different cities across America and try and search out what we think might be future Grammy nominees. We're trying to stay way ahead of the curve. So we do that, but clearly with Arcade Fire, with Mumford & Sons and others, we've started the collecting process with them and hope to, they're certainly already in the museum. The objects are from the previous Grammy Award show.
So Wynn Butler, the lead singer of Arcade Fire, was only 31 years old in this year, 2011, and they're already being tracked as a Grammy-winning band. They're already in the collection of the Grammy Museum. So let's get on board with that and listen to a track from that album, Arcade Fire, The Suburbs.
Survive.
Arcade Fire, The Suburbs. That's the Grammy Album of the Year for 2011. This is Kathy Geary, and you're listening to Now and Then here on WJFF Radio Catskill. On today's program, I've been having a wonderful time in a conversation with Bob Santelli, the executive director of the Grammy Museum in Los Angeles. You know, the Grammy Museum is a very vibrant place.
One thing that I love about this museum, as opposed to a history museum pretty much just looks back. We look back, we live in the present, and we look into the future, and it gives us a far more flexibility and freedom to really be a part of the contemporary music scene. And, you know, we have plans for Arcade Fire, which I can't talk about, but clearly they come from a long legacy. You know, members of that band connected to the great Albino Ray, which is one of the fathers of the electric guitar in the 1930s. So got some good ideas there for those guys.
Well, Mr. Santelli, you've been most gracious with your time. I've so enjoyed speaking with you today. Thank you so much. And I want to thank the listeners here in the Radio Catskill area for tuning in to today's episode of Now and Then. If you'd like to get in touch, please feel free to email me nowandthen@wjffradio.org. This is Kathy Geary, and thanks for listening.